At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Everybody, we got a great one today. You know, for a change, finally, someone who knows what he's talking about. Harry Littman, former U.S. attorney, prosecutor for the Justice Department, who we've had on the podcast before. Always great. I've been watching and listening to Harry on MSNBC, the Microsoft National Broadcasting Company network, during the Donald Trump hush money trial. And sometimes they get a little wonky on there, and I wanted to do one with Harry where my audience can clearly understand what the case is against Trump and what we're going to hear on Tuesday from the defense and from the prosecution on whom the burden will be to prove its case. The burden, of course, not on the defense. The burden, as always, on the prosecution to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt. And it's the jury who decides whether the prosecution did meet that threshold. So the defense in New York State goes first. And again, it doesn't have to prove anything. They'll get 3 hours to make their case, but they don't have to take all that time. They may want to, but again, the burden of proof is not on them. It's on the prosecution. And the prosecution will also get 3 hours to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Donald Trump violated New York state law by creating falsified business records, which is a misdemeanor, but becomes a felony when it's done in service of another crime, another misdemeanor, such as tax fraud or a federal election law violation or a state election law violation. Now, we'll go around the barn a couple times on that just to make sure it's clear on what it will take to convict Trump of a felony. So we'll do our damnedest here to make it all very clear. I hope we succeeded. It's a complicated case, but hopefully Harry and I, and mainly Harry, will clarify this for you in the next 35 minutes or so. So as I say, we got a great one today, you know, for a change, with a great Harry Littman.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
Moro Casino, America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Harry Littman is with us, former U.S. attorney, deputy assistant attorney general. Was that during which administration? Not Trump.
Not Clinton administration, which I'm sure to many of your listeners is a little bit like the Eisenhower or Millard Fillmore administration. You know, it was the last millennium.
Well, he did the bridge to the 21st century.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you. You've been covering the Trump trial for the L.A. Times.
Yeah.
How many days have you sat in the courtroom?
Most of them. So I wasn't there for jury selection, and I wasn't there this week for Costello. Oh. But all the other high points and medium and low points, I was there for. So most of the time.
That was either a low or a high point, depending which side you're.
Yeah. I mean, both. I've never seen anything like that.
Let me ask you, I mean, this is an obvious question. It seems like that was probably Trump's call. I mean, is that what everyone thinks, that he was the one who insisted on Costello?
You know, it is what everyone thinks. And while you couldn't have predicted the debacle, you could have predicted it wouldn't really be very helpful to him, and that the things the prosecution was able to emphasize through him, especially his emails that said, you know, we got to get Cohen in the fold and keep him from cooperating, made him a terrible witness, especially if you were only going to have one. The extra added feature of his acting like a jackass on the stand. And
have you seen that before?
Never. I've seen a few real idiot lawyers kind of roll their eyes, but a witness to actually, and not to mention a lawyer, to mutter and sneer and whatever, just mind-blowing. And to answer the first part of your question, yeah, almost certainly Trump. And, you know, he thinks in only one kind of toggle, I think, digital way. Does he like me? Is he with me or against me? Costello is with him. So he thought, oh, that'll be good. And, of course, it was ill-conceived and even much worse in the execution. And then the end of it, even after that, like, terrible pratfall, the very end was much better for the prosecution. And you remember, this is the only witness right that the defense proffered. So it just, and it had to have been a Trump call. Most clients, even big shot clients at this point, you'd have big shot lawyers saying, sit the F down. I'm in charge now. I'll tell you what you need to do.
But you don't say that to a former president of the United States.
You don't say it to Donald Trump in any event. And almost, he's almost invariably wrong. He insisted on saying he didn't sleep with Stormy Daniels. Unnecessary. And it's going to, you know, really make it harder for the jury to believe him. The way to try the case is to say, yes, my client's an asshole, but he's not a criminal. But Trump wouldn't go for that. Even now, they should be doing a lesser included offense, trying to get the misdemeanor. But Trump won't do that.
So, Harry, we're taping this on Wednesday, May 22nd. Yeah. I just want to get everyone to understand the context of this discussion. So this drops on Sunday. What happens between now and Sunday? Do you expect the judge to, what is it? What is the instructions to the jury? Is that it?
Yeah. So yesterday, Tuesday, he had this big conference, and there's a lot of instructions he went through, and he gave his rulings to most of them. And basically he said, I'll just go with the standard stuff. But there are some complicated things here. And the number one thing that's going to happen between now and when we drop is on Thursday, we'll get his actual, the instructions.
The instructions to the jury. They come back on Tuesday, the jury.
And the defense gives its closing argument. The prosecution gives its closing argument. They sit down. The judge
is that the order?
Legal instruction. Yeah, it's funny. It's different in different systems. Like in the federal system and in a lot of systems, prosecution goes first, then defense, then prosecution has a final rebuttal because it's got the burden. In New York, it's different. One big argument for the defense going first, one big argument for the prosecution going second, nothing else. And they need to know the instructions, as you were saying, because they need to be able to tell the jury, okay, as the judge will tell you, blah, blah, blah. Here.
So they needed to prepare their closing.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, they've been preparing their closing for months. The best sort of piece of advice I got as a young trial lawyer was try to write your closing argument the very first thing you do. So then everything funnels
but
into
then,
it.
It must change.
Some, okay. But you decide on your case, on your theory, on your order of proof, based on what you're going to say at the end. Because there's a lot of things here, Al, that just kind of flash by in the evidence. Like an extreme example is they put a paralegal on to just get into evidence all these phone calls, but now they can use them in closing argument. And that this is really going to be their tour de force, lots of pictures, et cetera.
So I want everybody to understand, because I've been watching coverage on MSNBC and you've been great and others have been great, but sometimes you guys wonk out And I can't follow.
You think so?
Yeah, I think you're so happy to be with other
wonkers. Yeah. Is that the word?
No, it's wonks. Okay. Wonks is the noun. So I just, you know, for example, this crime that the prosecution is proving is that it's falsifying business documents, right? And that's a misdemeanor.
Right.
And they have to prove that it was in service of another crime in order to be considered a felony. Is that correct?
Oh, you're a natural born wonk yourself. That's exactly correct.
That's all I understand.
That's all you got? Okay.
Yeah. What yeah. are the other crimes that it can be in service of? The prosecution, I think, has laid out three possibilities: tax fraud, federal election law violation, or a state election law.
Right. Again, go to the head of the class. But look, this is wonky kind of inherently.
Well, I think this is the hardest thing about the case to understand.
And the one, I think, remaining escape hatch for Trump. You know, it's tricky. Two lawyers on the jury, maybe they take it seriously. So let me give you my best minimally wonky explanation, okay?
Okay, and it may involve repeating exactly what I said, I think, because it's hard to understand that a misdemeanor, which is the falsifying business records, and that I think they've proven
pretty damn clear, right? They seem false, he knows they're false.
That is a misdemeanor under New York law, but it becomes a felony if it was done in service of another crime, or if another crime is done in service of that first crime. Is that right?
Okay, so now the words start to get, I am going to get wonky on you. Yes, you haven't said anything wrong yet, but I want to elaborate with precision. 175.05, you use these false records, it's a misdemeanor. And we know they're false. They're false because they say they're for legal services and they're not. 175.10, you do 175.05, the misdemeanor, but you intend to further another crime. You don't have to prove that you did the other crime. You don't have to even have started, but that was your intention. So now they need another crime. Now you would think there would be a crime in mind, but from the start, the DA has stayed steadfast in saying, I'm going to be agnostic. Here's a menu of three. You choose, and it looks as if the judge is going to tell the jury, you guys don't all have to agree as long as all 12 of you think there is a crime.
That feels kind of, and I want Trump to be convicted, but that feels a little fakakta. So one juror can believe he violated another crime or another statute or whatever in order to do this. And another juror can 4-4-4 or something like that, right?
100%. You need a national forum for you. You're a perfect wonk. Fakakta is the exact precise legal term here. And it's also,
fakakta,
I guess I would translate it, it's kind of funky, right? And, you know, given that feeling in your kishkas, I think it's we can expect that they're going to play this out on appeal. But that's like years down the road. He'll either be president and it's a disaster, or he won't be, and there'll be other cases coming in. But back to the three, because here's the thing about the three, why he doesn't choose one. Each of them has blemishes. Yeah, you can say tax fraud, but think about what happened here. Cohen and Trump Organization paid more taxes. They took the money and instead of reimbursing, they doubled it because they were going to call it income.
Right. So in other words, to pay back Cohen, he had to double the amount, thinking, okay, he's going to pay 50% of his income in taxes.
Because they were going to camouflage it as actual payment for legal services, like income.
But it's still falsifying the records. I mean, it's still falsifying.
Yeah, but we're at that second stage now. Is it in the service of a tax fraud? Yeah, I guess. But it's a little weird of a tax fraud when the state gets more money. Is it in the service of a federal election violation? Seems like it, because you can only give so much. You know this. And when you had to dow for dollars as a senator, a tragedy and a Shonda that you still aren't. But that's, I digress. There's, you know, they gave, this is a contribution to the campaign, and it's more than they were allowed to. That's a federal violation. But Can you take under the state law, can you make that predicate crime a federal crime? Not so clear, appellate issues. And then third, the state election law problem, same thing, but it's got this little phrase in there that says you have to violate the state law by unlawful means. And what the hell is that? What's that extra dollop of unlawfulness? So each of the three is sort of, a little ugly. So it's not just they don't have to agree, but all three are problematic. And a final point, let's say a court of appeals down the line says, you know, that second one shouldn't have even been in the mix. And there's no way of knowing that a juror didn't rely on that.
Let me ask you this. If he's convicted of a misdemeanor, just a misdemeanor, does he appeal?
Great question. I think the answer is yes, but he goes out and proclaims victory. He should. Here's another example of the client commandeering the case as he shouldn't. A misdemeanor, that's a victory for him. They could be asking now the jury to get what's called a lesser included offense instruction. Just decide on the misdemeanor. I would hate that as a prosecutor. That's an invitation to split the baby. But everyone's assessment is Donald Trump won't do that because he doesn't want to be even a little guilty. But if there's a misdemeanor, I think he will both proclaim a victory and appeal.
Yeah.
But the misdemeanor, as you said, pretty damn cut and dried, right? You know, and the evidence, what could you say? Because a misdemeanor, you affirm it if there's evidence to support it. And my God, obviously the stuff is false and there's sure evidence to show he knows it. So I wouldn't see much traction there.
How do you feel the defense did?
I think they did poorly, in part for the reason we're talking about. They were dealt a bad hand consistently by Trump, who wants them to argue Stormy Daniels and he didn't have sex. Why? Why argue that? And then you have to disbelieve everything she said, everything Pecker said, everything Cohen said, not to mention Hope Hicks. In general, I think they took on way more than they needed to. And moreover, and the real problem, they don't have a narrative. They don't have to under the law. They can just say their whole pitch could be, don't believe Michael Cohen. But, you know, that's what a jury's for. They took his measure, and I think they believed him. So they don't have, they have so far in the trial taken pot shots wherever they could. They, I think, missed more than they hit. But you don't know what if they're the jury and saying, what's Trump's pitch now? What's his story? What's his narrative? They ain't got one. And I think if they're true to form, it'll come time for closing arguments and they'll just say, don't believe Cohen because he's a liar and a thief. But they knew that already. And there's so much corroboration. So and also an individual examinations of Daniels, Cohen and Costello. They blew it, I would say, and the DA did a good job. So all in all, they're competent people, but their main guy is mainly a prosecutor, doesn't have a lot of experience as a defender, and it showed, and Trump, you know, just pushed them around. I think all in all, they did a pretty lousy job.
So you were a prosecutor.
I was.
What does the prosecution say in its closing argument? And evidently, they composed this at the beginning of the trial, if they followed your
advice. They're doing it right from the start. And this is going to be, you know, it's not just a sort of tying up of loose ends. This is like the whole five-act thing. They're going to put it all out there.
Do they have the same amount of time? Does the defense and the prosecution, are they given the same amount of time? And is that just in New York? Or is that in every state? Or what is this?
Yes, and every state. Except, you know, when the prosecution might get an extra little bit in rebuttal. But basically, yeah, same amount of time.
How much time is that? How much time are they given?
Up to the judge, my guess here, 3 hours. I think it'll be a very long day on Tuesday, closing arguments and instructions.
Okay. So each side will give, and there's a break in between? Like, who goes first? The defense goes first, huh?
Defense in New York goes first, and there are only two arguments. I'm thinking 3 hours approximately.
And does the prosecution get time? In other words, they get lunch or something like
totally
that?
Totally depends. So it's a strategy thing and up to the judge. Sometimes a defense will want to finish and have lunch happen.
Well, the defense here is going first, right?
Defense is going first. So it depends. But yes, it's the middle of the day. Most likely, they go in the middle of their closing argument. We have a morning break. End of their closing argument, we have a lunch break. Prosecution okay. goes 3 hours in the middle of it. There's the afternoon break, and then they go to the end. And here's the thing. It is not simply, you might think that it's just, trying to shore up some parts of the case. It is not. They're going to take, say, 30 to 50 important emails, transcript. They have the transcript now. They've gotten it every day from the court reporter. And they're going to have, at all times, it's going to be an audio-visual thing.
Tell me about that. What do they get to use? They use audio, they use video, anything they want?
As long as it's in evidence. Here's a perfect example. They brought a paralegal onto the stand who testified for 15 minutes that these calls were all authentic and by a business duty, blah, blah, blah. Goodbye, and that was all. Now they're in evidence. And in closing argument, and this was always the idea, they can put up that. Here's the 8 calls from Cohen to Trump or from Cohen to Davidson.
Stormy Daniels' lawyer.
And here's the email, and here's exactly what it said. Now, look at this, ladies and gentlemen. How could Trump possibly not know if he's saying here in his tweet that Cohen got paid back? Obviously knows.
They're Is that in a tweet?
At almost all times, each juror has a screen in front of him or her. And almost at all times, there'll be something up on it. It'll be like a PowerPoint that they've rehearsed again and again and again with their colleagues. And it's really going to be, you know, the whole thing boiled down, the whole story. And the answer to your question about why they did better, they told a good story. So I think they'll probably start again with Pecker, go through everything, explain why you don't need Cohen's testimony so much. But I mean, it's going to be really, this is their only opportunity to say, here's the evidence, here's what it means. You know, the rules, the special rules for how you get evidence are now out the window. Here it's all in. Let me tell you all about it, ladies and gentlemen. Let me give you like a mini series about what you've seen over the last 20 days.
How important was the moment where they showed the bodyguard. What's the name of the bodyguard?
Keith Schiller, yeah.
Yeah. And that was kind of proving that he talked to Trump when he said he did, right?
Well, the least that they were together, yeah. Because look, I think that whole thing is a little bit amplified.
Why don't you explain what I'm talking about?
Okay. So the one big hit that everyone was tongue wagging about, a call is made October 24th. Cohen testifies it's to Schiller's phone because he knows Trump is with him and he wants to tell Trump things are fine with Stormy Daniels. It's just one of many calls he makes along those lines. The real action is 2 days later, but that's what he testifies. And the defense cleverly, and I don't know how the prosecution missed this or didn't prepare Cohen, got other texts that showed that something else was on Cohen's mind that day. He was worried about a prank calls from a 14-year-old that he wanted Schiller to take care of. And they made a pretty effective, the defense, this was their probably best moment, of showing maybe you weren't calling Donald Trump. Maybe you were calling Keith Schiller only, and that's the reasons for the call. And now they'll say in closing, if he lied about this or got this wrong, he'll get everything wrong. What that picture was, the prosecution then found a picture of Schiller and Trump together that day. Because remember, what Cohen said was, look, then I did both. But what I remember is talking to Trump. Now, let's say Trump that day was, you know, overseas or at a rally or whatever. That would have been a rough piece of evidence for them. Instead, they have Schiller and Trump together. So really, they introduced that picture.
At exactly that time. I mean, that's...
At exactly the time.
At that moment.
Fights about it. But now that really substantiates Cohen's account and makes it seem like, yeah, so he didn't remember the detail about the 14-year-old, but it was still a call to Trump. The picture showed pretty likely a call to Trump because Schiller is with Trump.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Harry Lindman.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Back with Harry Littman. How much of this that he cared about the election versus he cared about Melania? It doesn't seem that he really did care that much about Melania, because there's now is there testimony to the fact that he basically was saying, maybe we can get away without paying her if we wait till after the election?
So there's that he tries to stall till after the election. There's his, what he says to Cohen, how long do you think I'll be on the market?
Now, is that's what Cohen testifies. Cohen.
Now, Madeline Westerhout, who still loves him and is trying to get back in his good graces, made it sound as if they're awfully close and they love each other.
Trump and Melania.
Now, of course, there's the screaming fact that the jury no doubt noticed. Melania was nowhere to be seen the entire trial. But to your question, well,
that's significant. I mean,
and they definitely noticed. Yeah. But there's a legal answer that's important. Under the rule of the FEC, and he decided to charge on this, if the jury thinks that however much he cared about Melania, he would have done it anyway to protect his own ass, whether it's 20-80, 80-20, that's good enough. So even though I think there's a lot of evidence that the jury will conclude he didn't give a rat's ass about Melania, the legal answer is, if he would have done it anyway for his political fortunes, he's still guilty. That's enough. So I think the short answer is that could have been something they would have hoped for, but it's gone now under the evidence.
Okay. Explain the how long will I be on the market? Not long. Quote.
Well, what a crass jacket. I think what he's saying is, yeah, she'll find out. Yes, she'll divorce me. And I'll get another young, beautiful babe as my fifth wife or whatever with that long hair.
I think it'll only be the fourth.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
See, we're just too hard on the guy, you know?
Well, that shows your bias.
Exactly. Don't put me up there. But yeah, that's the notion. How long do you think I'll be on the market? So that's actual contempt for the idea.
Now, what should the defense say?
I think, in my experience, you need a story, a counter narrative. That's what like an alibi is. It's a story. They don't seem to have a story. One story could have been this was all about Melania, but I think that's foreclosed. We know they're going to try to say Cohen's a piece of shit, don't believe anything he said, but the jury sat there, took his measure. It's the important function of a jury, and I think are going to believe him and not believe Trump. So they need a narrative, not just to take pot shots at prosecution witnesses. I think the best they can do is say, look, don't even worry about whether he slept with her. Don't even worry about it was false. He's so busy that, you know, he signed things, but he didn't really know. And of course, there's tons of evidence that he cares about every nickel. And Pecker saying Cohen couldn't take him to lunch without. I don't know what story the defense has waiting. Now, you know, under the rules, it was the prosecution's case. Maybe they have something, but I don't see it. And if they just say, you don't believe Cohen, I don't think it's good enough. So they're in trouble, I think, precisely because there's not a counter narrative.
Well, you're saying that they wrote their closing before the trial started. That's what you say all good lawyers should do.
All good prosecutors, because prosecutors carry the burden. You know, defense have to go with the hand they're played, and they, you know, the evidence came in as it did. But yeah, they should have a theory of, you know, I think if you ask the jury right now or anyone who's been following it, what's the prosecution's theory of the case? I could tell you in a moment. Okay, what's the defense theory of the case? That Michael Cohen is not credible? That's not a theory of the case, especially with all the corroboration. I don't know their theory of the case. And that's why I think, except for the wild card of one guy going off the reservation or maybe this weird legal thing, they're going to lose.
Well, you may be wrong.
I may be wrong, for sure.
Yeah. What's the appeals process like?
The short answer is interminable. So it's going to be, let's say he's convicted.
Yeah.
It'll be, on the one hand, it'll be a couple years until he'll face the music, but he'll be sentenced first, and it could be to a few months in jail. Let's say he's acquitted. Well, let's say he becomes the bigger thing, not a convicted acquittal. It's president or not president. If he becomes president, the conviction won't be final. It's a state law thing, so he can't wave a wand, president's wand, and make it go away. But things are going to change. It's just going to be a whole different Megillah. But if he's convicted and not president, I think he will face the music eventually. It'll be a couple years. I think the appellate...
Where does it go first? Where does it go to the appellate? What court does it go to?
There's an intermediate appellate division which must take it.
And is that a state court?
A state court. And then the highest state court, which doesn't have to take it. And he could try federal habeas, but that wouldn't hold off the sentence. But here's what happens. He gets sentenced. I think it's very possible Merchan will give him a few months in jail if he's convicted. Then he'll say, could I please have bail pending appeal? Because some defendants get put in right away. And Merchan will say, yes. He will not put him in until he gets to play out his appellate rights. Meaning,
right,
if he sees the inside of a jail cell for this case, we're talking 2026. And then so much will have happened on the other cases or not, depending on whether he's elected.
Well, let's talk about the other cases if he doesn't get elected. So the Georgia case, also a state case. So that doesn't matter either way. About if he's elected or not, they still go ahead with it or not?
I think the Supreme Court will say they don't go ahead with it while he's president. So if it hasn't happened, then it probably won't. She did just win re-election, as did the judge. But unless it goes by November, I think the court will just say, we can't do it while he's president. So see you in 4 years.
Okay, so he loses, right?
He loses. All these cases are going to happen.
Right. The January 6th and the documents.
They may take a while, but he's in really grievous trouble then, because especially, like, let's take the Mar-a-Lago case, such a strong case, and just keeps getting stronger. We just found out yesterday, 3 times after swearing we've given you everything, they found more classified documents. She's slow rolling it, but now there's nothing to do.
That's the judge.
No, yeah, but now it's going to happen. And, you know, and that's a very strong case. January 6th case is going to happen, maybe as curtailed by the Supreme Court.
Curtailed, you're talking about in the immunity. What do you think of that? First of all, I think they deliberately dragged this out.
I got to say, I fear and loathe what the Supreme Court's done here. And maybe they deliberately dragged out. Maybe they just thought what we care about is the legal principle and not the importance of the country having a solution before November.
They took an awfully long time to take the case.
And they're still taking a long time. And I think they're going to say something that is going to blow a big hole in the case. We'll leave some things intact, but blow a big hole. And I think it all sucks. This is, I think, really a grievous abuse of the Supreme Court's power.
Are you looking at a 6-3 or a 5-4? Well, you don't know. I'm not going to ask you to predict.
So look, if you really were getting good and nerdy now, which I love, but so Barrett and Roberts seem to be kind of twins. You can even see a way in which they hold against him. But I think we're looking 6-3 at the basic proposition that there's some immunity to worry about here. And as soon as that happens, there's a remand, there's a narrowing of the case. So I think there's going to be multiple opinions. And I think, you know, Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas will be really on the hard right. But the main thing for the expedition of the case is if they say anything about the charges that require, you know, some determination or remand, we're not going to see this.
Explain remand.
Okay, Chutkin, here's a new rule that you didn't consider. If he's acting in the super core of his powers, and you've got to tell us that, then he's immune. Uh-oh, here's a new rule as opposed to what the D.C. Circuit said, which is, no, the whole indictment is okay. So now it will go back. That's what a remand is. It returns to her to apply the Supreme Court rule, and there'll arguments on both sides and, you know, maybe appeals from there.
So she decides something and then it can go to appeal again to the Circuit Court.
Yes, it can.
And then the Supreme Court can take it again.
If he loses, he will face the music at some point.
At some point. Okay.
Of course, he's an old 70. That was an interesting part about being in the courtroom, Al, is to really see him up close. Man, he is like not a healthy dude. He's like, his color is weird. He's like a golem or something. His shape is off. He really looks to me kind of freakish. Seriously.
Now, was it sleeping or was it him?
No doubt about it. I also had binoculars. There were people, I was on TV and somebody next to me was being very cautious. I can only say there's, and I was like, REM. I mean, I actually zeroed in and we got that, you know, and then there's that. The guy, without doubt, was asleep for part of it.
Okay.
I'm just a reporter here.
Yeah, that's right. You're covering it for the LA Times and you're the only one covering it for them.
That's right. It's great. I mean, I feel so privileged being in the room. There's like 40 of us, but you can see the jury. It's really great.
And how was the jury reacting during all of this? Or you don't know, right?
They in particular were pretty inscrutable. Normally, as a case goes on, when they come in, you see like, oh, one's talking to four and there's a little joke. But they marched in, you know, soldiers of justice, sat down, marched out. I think they're really aware of the stakes of the case. So they were a hard read. The one thing you could generally see is, are they paying attention or not? And I'll just report to you, they were basically paying attention. When they weren't, it was more on the defense side. And they were totally paying attention at the end for the Costello pratfall.
And you were not there for the Costello pratfall.
True, I was not there, but people who I sat with the whole time were there and I talked to them at length. They were basically an attentive and well-behaved jury. And you're always looking in a criminal case as an old prosecutor, who out there is the possible holdout? And what I did not see, an obvious juror who's just like, you know, not listening, absenting himself or herself from the game, mm-hmm. The kind of profile of someone who's just going to fold their arms and say, I'm not voting no matter what, which would be a violation of the orders. In New York, it's interesting. He's going to actually instruct them. If you find guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, you must vote to convict. Anyway, I think they're overall attentive. You know, this guy and that woman, I'm like, maybe less persuaded. That one and that one and that one are totally on board. But I did not see... I did not see the juror who seems likely to me. If it turns out there's a holdout, I'll be hard pressed to say who it was until we find out.
And if there is a holdout, what happens? The retrial?
If they really hold and really hold and really hold, it's a hung jury.
Yeah.
And they would retry, but it won't be by November. Trump will take it as a victory, even though it's 11-1. Even if it's 11-1, 10-2. He will proclaim victory.
And do they report that's the margin?
Yeah, so here's what'll happen. It'll go 3, 4, 5, 6 days. Maybe there'll be a few questions. Finally, they'll tell the judge, we're deadlocked. We can't. And maybe they'll tell the vote, 10-2 or whatever. Judge will bring him in and give what's called an Allen charge. He'll really exhort them, try hard, listen to your jury, you know, but it's the right of, that's the jury system. Then he'll send them back in. Another day or two passes and they say it's intractable. He'll say, okay, mistrial. The whole trial is off the history books. And it'll be up to the prosecution whether to go back and do it again. I think they probably will, but it doesn't really matter because they won't do it by November, and Trump will proclaim victory.
Well,
that's our jury system. And it's a great one, right? Beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, these guys are there. They're taking their job seriously. It's a former president. You know, it gets you, that part of me that's all like misty-eyed about the justice system, and which is why you're, you know, so upset about Trump is crapping all over it. It's gratifying. It's inspiring. You know, 12 normal citizens are hearing it all and are going to pass independent judgment. God bless the USA.
Well, thank you, Harry. And I look forward to seeing you.
Let's get together in New York because they're going to have the final arguments, and then will people just be hanging around biting their nails?
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.